This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi Exceptional Luxury Performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at geraldjonesaudi.com.
Well, with the announcement earlier this week that come February, Diana Murphy will become the second female president in the history of the United States Golf Association, it means the term of the current president, Tom O'Toole, is coming to an end. It is a pleasure to welcome Tom O'Toole back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hello, Tom.
John, how are you? Always good to be with you.
Well, same here. It's great to have you on the show. How quickly have these 2 years flown by?
Well, you know, if you ask my wife and our children or maybe some of my law partners, maybe not that quickly, but it does. When you're in the middle of it, in the whirlwind, it's going by at a pretty quick clip. And so I think, personally, I think it has gone by, even though there's certain parts of it that I think will always think back in my memory that were things that, when you got down in the depth of them, they seemed to last or be a little bit more lengthy.
Your position, the position of president, is by design temporary. Presidents before you, presidents will come after you. So what were your goals coming into this position? What did you want to do, and have you achieved them?
Well, I always let John or somebody else assess how we did, and I always want to make sure to set this thing with the collective we, because, you know, it was a really committed and dedicated board with a staff led by Mike Davis of over 300 and a critical executive staff of probably 10 or 12 that really had moved the needle, in my opinion, during these 2 years. So it was a collective we. But I'll let somebody else judge how we did. I think, objectively, one of the things that I thought our board was aligned on was to get our organization in a better position strategically. Let's have some thought and really have, you know, we adopted a strategic plan earlier in my career on the board, but maybe if we could simplify that and operate it within it, have metrics to measure how we had done and performed within those strategic priorities. And then I think the alignment between the two entities, you know, the USGA is a different organization in that, you know, you have an executive staff that's really committed and dedicated, led by Mike. And frankly, John, as you know, substantially elevated from a talent capability during the last few years. To how does that group work with a really committed and dedicated board of highly successful people, present company excluded, of course. But, you know, you look at the complexion of the education level and business accomplishments of our board, pretty impressive. And so how do you get those two groups to work for the common end and for the common goal? And I think, you know, we created this co-advocate program where we worked on these strategic priorities together, where I assigned a member of the board and a member of the executive staff to push their shoulder behind a particular objective. And it just, you know, there seems to be a better working relationship between the two entities now, and predominantly because our board's trying to be more strategic and less operational. Because the talent level has been raised in the staff. So I think that's probably one of the collective views, if you look at the USGA from, I don't know how many thousand feet, 10 or 20, that we're better now at that. So I think that's something that we tried to set out to do. And I hope, again, others will gauge or measure that we did that.
A couple of questions about some of the actions that have been taken recently over the last few years, really. Anchored stroke becoming illegal in January. Are you surprised at all, Tom, that this seems to have turned into a referendum on the long putter and not necessarily the stroke? And are you surprised that it appears that more players are not just going to continue to use the long putter and just not anchor?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, John, about that, because I've seen some evidence of the long putter being used without anchor and others not. So I think the jury will probably still be out on that as players try to sort to a spot where they're comfortable. I got the Golf Channel on in my office right now, and I see Adam Scott leading in the Bahamas. So, you know, he's working his way through in his physical and mental perspectives of what's best for him. I think each player will do that. I don't think so much it was a referendum is that, look, this is one instance where we really had an open and healthy debate. It was a polarizing issue, and people lined up on both sides that had strong feelings about their respective sides. And, you know, the Tim Finchman of PGA Tour came out in strong view of some of the minority of his players that did anchor. But we had a healthy debate, I think, and it was transparent, it was open, and we got to a spot that they realized that we were doing this to protect the integrity of the stroke in the game, which we thought was an important aspect of how this game has been played, that it's played with the club being swung freely away from your body without being attached or anchored, and that was a fundamental part of the game. But we got to a spot that I think people, even though they may have been on both sides of the issue, respected the how we went about it, ourselves in the RNA, and I think the game's moved past it. I think they've moved past it, and we'll see whether long putters are used by some and figuring out other ways to do it. That's going to play itself out over the next year, because, you know, as you look at last time I watched Bernhard Langer playing, he was still anchoring and mm-hmm. with the long putter. So, you know, there'll be players that, you know, when the point of demarcation comes on, in less than a month, that we'll see different efforts based on different players.
We're talking with Tom O'Toole, the president of the United States Golf Association. One other issue, Tom, speak for a moment about the USGA deciding to address in the handicap rules playing alone and peer review.
Yeah. Well, John, first of all, the you want to set the record clear here that this has nothing to do with us trying to dilute the integrity of this sport or how its rules are applied, which has been the criticism that's been in the marketplace since we made this announcement. That's the beauty of our sport, is it is self-policing. And we do apply the rules against ourselves, and that's why we, you know, all of us that love this game think that there's really it attracts a unique person and people that have that very fiber about them. Where this crosses over is that, and you know, John, and for your listeners' benefit, a really critical element of the USGA handicap system to avoid from handicaps being manufactured, if I can use that term, is the concept of peer review. And, you know, we were the only nation, really, or governing golf body that permitted our players' posted scores that were played alone. And I think, you know, one of the things that we're trying to do in our global governance with the RNA is to move towards a worldwide handicap system. So this is another subject that was debated over a long period of time on our handicap procedures committee, and wasn't done in a willy-nilly type fashion. And so, we think it's important as we move towards a global system that we try to have aspects that are consistent with what a worldwide system would look like. And so this was one of those items that we said, look, people can criticize manufactured handicaps if they are not played and attested to or witnessed. And so this was an element that, while some looked at it or swallowed hard from the perspective that we were questioning their integrity and they play this game and apply the rules, self-policing nonetheless, This was an important part of the handicap process that we thought, as we move towards a global system, we ought to implement. So we're in interaction with the bodies, Golf Canada, for one, of trying to talk to them about their concerns, and they're a great partner of ours. And we, of course, want to be good listeners and make sure that we have we understand that process. And then they were part of the handicap procedures matter, too. So, but that's the logic behind it. It's not focused on questioning anybody's integrity.
In the minute or so we have left, Tom, while you were president, the drive, chip, and putt competition came to fruition. You've overseen a couple of them. How rewarding has that been?
Wow. You know, this is one of these things, John, that you do. We got into this thing because we were invited by the Augusta National Golf Club and the Masters Tournament Foundation and Chairman Billy Payne to partake in something that we thought would help grow the game, or as we like to use the vernacular, you know, help the health of the game, and in this case, focus in on youth. You know, we thought that, this is a good thing to partner with the PGA of America and Augusta National on. Let's see. I could have never, ever envisioned the impact that this has had and the how the needle's been moved in this group with people to and young people and their families. What we saw the first 2 years was monumental. We have every reason to believe it's continuing. Will continue to grow. You know, we've doubled our numbers. It's an exciting initiative, and obviously the carrot to be able to come to Augusta National Golf Club the Sunday before the Masters is one of the big drivers there. So let's always be humble that we appreciate our friends at Augusta National Golf Club, particularly Chairman Billy Payne, that included us in this initiative. This will continue to move the needle for years to come.
Tom, I in your tenure, you have always been kind enough to come on the program and answer the questions, and I can't thank you enough for doing that. And we will speak again, but I wish you all the best.
John, always enjoyed sharing time with you. You know, it's a privilege of a lifetime to serve as president of the USGA. The organization's in great hands. I think the game's got a bright future. My successor, Diana Murphy, is well aligned with all the things I mentioned earlier in our board and our executive staff and Mike. So things are looking up for the USGA. I'm excited for them and was lucky to get a chance to do this.
Do me a favor. When you leave that note in her desk, as all presidents do to future presidents, let her know I'm okay. I'm a good guy and she can talk to me.
You're one of the best, John. Keep doing what you're doing. You're making a difference, too, in the marketplace.
I appreciate it, Tom. Thank you very much.
Merry Christmas.